Can we increase the sound just a tiny bit? And maybe make sure our choir members are hearing? Yes, yes, yes. We continue on the move with Jesus in the Gospel of John. This week we find ourselves at another Jewish festival. Imagine a very hopping weekend in Jerusalem. Maybe think about how the bustle and the hustle of Chinese New Year and all the energy and the anticipation and the excitement about events like that. That's what's going on in Jerusalem. Jesus milling about with his disciples at one of his favorite hangouts, the temple. Imagine him speaking with theologians, talking about being born from above, or saying things like, the kingdom of God is here and now. Or maybe the commoners asking him questions about the wild and wonderful things that have been going on in the boonies, the rural hills of Galilee. Or even what some of them have heard has happened in the armpit region of Samaria. Someone cries out, I've heard that you and your disciples turned Sychar upside down. That you're talking about this way and you're saying that you're the Son of God and that the whole town converted to the way of the Son of God. Is it true that you are who they say you are? Lamb of God? King of Israel? Other voices perhaps are not so kind, maybe murmuring and a little gruff, saying, getting so many people drunk at that Capernaum wedding, I'll tell you what he was doing. And to think his mother was with him. Imagine how embarrassed she was, him keeping that party going, that reckless partying. But another yells out, Capernaum, I've heard that he's just healed the royal official's son. He didn't even have to be there. The son was on his deathbed, and all Jesus did was speak a word, and he was healed. Things getting intense and overwhelming, and Jesus and his disciples moving away from the center of the temple court toward the fringes. The crowd kind of fades away, and the murmurs dissipate. Jesus making his way to the outer gates of the temple. He arrives at the pool of Bethesda. Imagine a pool that's the size of a football field. And it's got walls around it. And it's got this big center wall in the middle of it. There's porticos. There's these five porches on either end. And there's a porch that leads into that center area. It's the busiest entryway. And Jesus walks in with his disciples into this dimly lit, dusty deck. I was thinking it's kind of like Star Wars Part 4, the cantina scene on Tatooine. Can you imagine that? Kind of weird people, weird creatures, strange drinks and strange foods and people wheeling and dealing, trying to turn a trick or something like that. And you see Han Solo in the corner with his gun in his holster. Did he shoot Guido first, or did Guido shoot first? Except it's, you know, hundreds of people. So Jesus moving among the socially expendable. Beggars, prostitutes, day laborers, hustlers, penny merchants. And it's stinky. It's Crapsville. Imagine it. The sweat, the rancor, the humidity, the mugginess. This is not a place for the weak of stomach. And rumor has it that there's magical powers in these pools. That once or twice a day when they ripple and buzz, that if you're the first one in the pool, a miracle happens. You get touched by an angel. The sores that are on your body get healed, or if you're blind, then you're able to see again, or if you've got some part of your body that's crippled or lame, it miraculously gets healed. Jesus wandering amongst these people in this place. His disciples maybe drift to the back or the perimeter because they just can't stand the smell of it or people groping at their robes. Jesus in conversation with a woman who's pointing to this crippled man who's slowly making his way towards the pool. Imagine his lame legs and him elbowing his way through the bodies and these makeshift tents, and he's dragging his tattered mat along with him. Jesus learns that this man has been lame for 38 years. He kneels close to the crippled one and he asks this famous question: do you want to get well? The puzzled man avoids the question. He speaks with this tired and gravelly voice: sir, with all due respect, I don't have a single friend in the world who will put me in the pool when the water's stirring. While I'm on my way there, someone else gets in ahead of me. Jesus stands up before the crippled man and he says, get up, pick up your mattress, walk. Can you imagine the look on this man's face? So maybe Jesus has to say it again and it's louder. Get up, pick up your mattress, walk. The crippled man pushes himself over his legs, and then to his astonishment, after being on all fours, he can actually push himself up and he's stabilizing and he's actually balancing. He picks up his mattress and his eyes start beaming with delight. This crazy grin plastered across his face. Imagine, those in the immediate vicinity are amazed. This one who's been lame for almost four decades, standing right before their eyes. Maybe you're in the crowd. You look across and you see this old, skinny, bony woman saying, he's risen! He's risen! The fool is risen! This 70-year-old man stumbles out of the poolside porch and has the sense to go somewhere where he can give thanks to God. And so we follow him to the temple. It's maybe a 20 or 30 minute walk, and maybe he's stumbling like a toddler at first, but then he's running with joy and great energy towards the temple. But on the way to the temple, or once he gets into that big temple court, about a dozen religious leaders grab him, and they stop him and they say, it's the Sabbath. You shouldn't be carrying your mattress. The man pauses. Wait a minute. The man who cured me told me to pick up my mattress and walk. Oh, really? And who is this man who told you to pick it up and walk? And the healed one looks at this group of Pharisees or religious leaders, and he has no answer. And so they shove him aside and go on their way. He slips through the crowd, finds this quieter place to give thanks in a quiet corner in the temple. He probably knows not whether to laugh or cry, to scream with joy, or what in the world has happened, or maybe he comes up with a scheming idea of, imagine all the places I could be or do stuff and no one knows that I'm around, no one knows I can walk. He's lost in wonder and thought, and then he smacks back into the crowd and re-meets Jesus. Jesus grabs him by the shoulders and looks him in the eye and declares, look, you've been made well. Don't sin anymore, or something worse might happen to you. The man drops to his knees, fear, wonder, revelation. Is this Jesus, Joseph's son? Nazareth Jesus? He runs back to the religious leaders and he says, this man who told me to pick up and walk, it's Jesus. And these religious leaders, imagine their disdain, steam blowing out of their ears. They run to find this Jesus, dragging this healed one with them. You heal on the Sabbath, Jesus? Why do you do these things on the Sabbath? It's an outrage. And we read of Jesus' simple response. My Father is going on working, and so am I. If you come to church on Sundays seeking certainty and certitude, you'd better stop reading the Jesus stories, because they're crazy, are they not? Filled with these weird ways that Jesus lives and moves and has his way of being. Today we meet another unnamed person living on the margins and in the stinky haze of the shadows of this pool of Bethesda. This man shows no faith. This man shows no belief. This man shows no initiative. I was thinking if he had a shirt, it would have that Pete Seeger phrase on it: "My get up has gone up and went." So he just sits there, laying there, decade after decade after decade, and Jesus heals him. Is this good news? Or is it bothersome? Don't you wonder, like, doesn't Jesus have any standards, like any guidelines, any boundaries? Doesn't he have ethics or prerequisites? And don't we sometimes find ourselves siding with the Pharisees, the religious leaders, and asking, "You've got 6 other days to heal this man. Why don't you do it? It's been 38 years. Could you not wait until a day other than the Sabbath?" It's almost like you're flaunting it in our face, Jesus. We've got rules, you know? We worship the one true God. We're trying to respect his image. We're trying to protect Yahweh's name. And can't you see your behavior's getting in the way of the law? Jesus, the barrier breaker at the well in Samaria, is now the law breaker, the Sabbath breaker here in Bethesda. He simply responds, "My Father goes on working, and so am I." And I was thinking, even if you want to make that a little more punchy, he might have said it, "My Father goes on working, and so I am." Imagine the religious leaders going berserk when Jesus says, "I am that I am." This is the kind of stuff that gets people killed in religious circles. And Jesus is just throwing fuel on the fire. So where is the good news? What's the good news of this story for us? Because that's why we need to live in these Jesus stories, is we need to hear and encounter the good news so that we might be good news bearers as the people of God. I'd like to suggest 2 verses where Jesus arouses our attention, or maybe shakes us up. And the first one is that famous one: "Get up, pick up your mattress, walk." On the surface here, it feels like Jesus is simply playing favorites, picking out his favorite low-life person and telling him he's won the lotto. But we're in the Gospel of John here, and it's cosmic sometimes, and it's earthy and gritty other times. And when Jesus is healing this sick, sorry old man in Bethesda, he's also announcing something cosmic going on for all the world. Jesus is declaring that God's on the move. This is God at work in the world. He's declaring that he's on the move, and through the presence of Jesus and the Spirit, he's healing not only sick, sorry old men, but Jesus is on the move healing this sick, sorry old world of ours. He's bringing healing in spite of our lack of faith, in spite of our disbelief, in spite of our hope or our hopelessness, in spite of our tendency to lean on Jesus' good luck charms or trying to get an email out to enough people so that our prayers will get answered. In spite of all of that, Jesus simply shows up whenever he wants, however he wants, whether we're disbelieving or believing. That's good news, believe it or not, that Jesus shows up, whether we can conjure up the faith, belief, or hope or not. And there's another piece of good news here. Verse 14, when Jesus refines the crippled man, when he says, "Look, you're better again. Don't sin anymore, or something worse might happen to you." This is not ultimatum language for Jesus, but this is Jesus finishing up what I'm calling the half-baked healing. He's crippled his mind. He's healed this crippled man's body, but now he endeavors to heal mind, heart, and soul. He grabs the man by the shoulders and says, "Look, you're better. Don't persist in the ways that lead to death. Persist in the ways that lead to deep, lasting life." And I think that might be a good wake-up call for us in the season of Epiphany. We have been healed in many ways because of our encounters with Jesus, our relationship with Christ, our experiences with God. But maybe in Epiphany, Jesus is in the most loving way possible, grabbing us by the shoulders and saying, "Don't persist in the ways that lead to death. Don't persist in those ways where you just whine and you wallow at the poolside of Bethesda. I have come so that you might be new, new creation. Don't live in the old ways. The old has gone. The new has come. New creation has come." It made me think about Philippians chapter 1, verse 6, where Paul echoes this. He says, "He who has begun a good work in you will be faithful to complete it." Isn't that great news for us to hear in this season of Epiphany? One preacher I was reading this week who was commenting on this text put it this way: Jesus is doing God's work, like Father, like Son. On the Sabbath, God does not cease from the work of giving life, and neither does Jesus. Life and love flow from God's heart at all times, in all places, to all people, towards a Samaritan woman, towards a royal official, towards a nameless, sick, lonely man. Life and love flow. Our words of confidence and assurance this morning are found in verse 17. The Father is going on working, and so am I. As we close today's time in this story, I hope this becomes and feels like good news to you. The choir has already sung to us of God's accompaniment. We are not alone. Life and love flow from God's heart at all times, in all places, to all people. And so for us as the people of God, as we enter another week, the voice of Jesus, the Spirit of the living God, urges us to get up, to walk. And as we do so, perhaps the prayer from Ephesians chapter 3 might be good for us to hear as we close our time in the Word this morning.